The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you find Christianity too old-fashioned. In fact, you find the very ideas of good and evil old-fashioned. Well, my friend, that's a very popular thing to say, and that might be why you're saying it or thinking it. It is quite common for people to talk about what we would call moral relativism. But nobody really lives as if they accept it. People will make that attempt when talking about politics or certain social issues, but the arts betray them. In the arts, their Freudian slips come to the surface. For example, if we don't see good and evil in movies, we usually don't like movies unless it's some comedy or glorified two-hour skit. And who better to discuss movies than film critic Mark Boobian? Mark, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me on again, Bob. And I absolutely agree. What is more boring than a moral relativist movie? Nothing. That's why there aren't really any out there. After our show last time, I actually challenged myself to go and try to find some films that maybe discuss moral relativism to see what the arts had to say about it.
We should give the audience some context. A few weeks ago, okay, Mark was on, and we talked about good and evil, particularly in fairy tales and fantasies. And
right,
we talked about how they're starting to change some of them.
Right, the re-envisioning of the evil character as
like wicked and
yes,
maleficent. The evil person maybe was the good person.
Sometimes, they're just sort of re-examining the character and giving you, fleshing them out a little more.
Right.
Not necessarily changing them, but
and I mentioned I didn't like that kind, but then I mentioned a kind I did like when originally it was envisioned by the author to show how someone like a Darth Vader or an Anakin Skywalker became a Darth Vader or a Lex Luthor turned evil. And that kind of talk about good and evil I liked in movies. So but it got us onto quite a topic.
Yeah, well, it's a big topic, I think. Even though it's such a simple idea, good and evil, it's the most basic concept in human history, probably, and we could spend weeks and weeks discussing it because it is such a really broad topic. And here we are, like I was starting out to say, without context, that moral relativism is one of those elements that we're kind of struggling with as a culture right now, and that has a lot to do with the acceptance, the view, the way we relate to good and evil through our moral response. And our struggle with what our moral response should be. And what better place to go to find out what people think than to the arts, because that's where we really reveal our souls, I believe. And that's one of the reasons I love movies and books and whatever so much, is because I can really see and be challenged on different ideas. Okay, so that's what I did since the last show. I went to try to find anything about moral relativism that had, not necessarily this is a movie about moral relativism, but maybe something that dealt with that as an idea or had it kind of floating below the surface. Sometimes that happens in films, and those tend to be really good movies when they're a little below the surface. But in this case, I really couldn't come up with anything. I really racked my brain. I've got two that are a little bit of a reach. One that's a whole episode of Star Trek. Where else do you go when you want to be challenged by some kind of different philosophy than to Star Trek? And then another place is the more recent The Dark Knight Rises movie. That's from 2012. There's a little bit of moral relativism in the movie. That's not necessarily the theme of the film, but we see some of it play out in that film. So those are a couple of places to discuss it. But let's start by defining moral relativism. I think that's a good place to start, too, because what is moral relativism? We can say the term, everybody, you go to the internet and everybody's got a different definition. And don't go to Wikipedia. That's always going to be my recommendation, because anybody can change it. I can go change it. And I might.
That's such a bizarre. Why do they have that set up so that anybody could write anything when the whole idea is you're supposed to find facts?
How can you find
facts if anybody can write anything?
Right. Good question. But then this delves right back into the subject of good and evil.
Usually the high majority of what they have on Wikipedia is true when you go and test it with other sources. Well, they usually list their sources and they can be checked.
Sometimes. But, yeah. The problem, whatever. This is a whole other philosophical issue that has to do with good and evil, because I think Wikipedia in general is evil, but that's...
We'll have to do a show on Wikipedia sometime.
Yeah, there you go.
Wikipedia, the musical.
Yeah. Where we can re-envision it as good maybe later on.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to write that one.
Battlestar Galactica, we'll do a reimagining.
Right, there you go. And we know how that turned out when they...
Hey, did you know they're coming out with another Battlestar Galactica movie? True. And it's another reimagining? It's even a reimagining from the reimagining? Aren't they getting tired of that?
I don't know. If the... people that were in charge of the series that just recently was on TV, the Star Trek people, if they are in charge of it, then it's going to be good and we're seeing. If not, then it's a crapshoot, I guess.
Yeah.
But speaking of good and evil yet again, that's another. Yeah. See, so all of these things. I mean, there's a lot of really good examples of good and evil in film, but we've just talked about a couple that have to do with that. And yet,
good and
not
evil and the dumb decisions they make when they're making film.
Right. And not a lot of it, though, has this sort of idea that, well, you know, it's sort of all relative to me or you. So moral relativism is morality being decided by an individual or culture. That's sort of the most basic definition that I found, not on Wikipedia, but on a philosophy website from a university. So it must be true if it's on a university site, right? That's the way I look at it anyway. So the problem is that... it's an observable fact that moral relativism is kind of true. Let's just take George Carlin and his, what is it, five words you can't say on the radio?
Seven words, I believe.
I can't say any of them.
We can't say any of them. Yeah, you can't even say them right now to illustrate the
point. Right, but there's a couple of words, like in England, there's one word that you never say in England, but we can say it in America. We can even say it on the radio. But if I were in England, people would be horrendously offended if I just said that word. And... do I have to say the word? Yes, bloody, that's the word.
Oh, okay.
So, see, I can say it on the radio, no consequences. Not to me, anyway. Bob, you might have to pay.
Because we don't have a bloody FCC that'll right. stop us from doing it.
There you go. But here's an example of something that is culturally decided, so that gives moral relativism a little bit of, you know, something to stand on, a little bit of solid ground.
Well, I'm not convinced of that, but I'll let you make your point.
Yes, one great example, and I've got it. The whole philosophy is justified, right, Bob? Isn't that what it takes in the philosophy?
Yeah, you have to do better than that.
Well, I'm not actually trying
to... oh, by the way, I don't assume that everything they teach at a university is true either.
Oh,
I need to throw that into...
hey, wait, didn't you teach at a university?
I would put it these days... I have, but I would put it these days equal to Wikipedia.
Yeah, right, there you go. Yes, well, and yet another area of discussion, worthwhile discussion. Okay, so like I said, Star Trek was one place to go to kind of look at one place I could find, could see an episode that dealt with moral relativism a little bit. I don't think that was necessarily their intent, but you can kind of see it, and it does raise some good questions, just like this idea that, yeah, some morals are cultural. So what's wrong with moral relativism? So let's take a look here. This is Star Trek, The Next Generation. It's from season 3, which was one of their really good seasons, I believe. The Survivors was the name of the episode. And it kind of is a slow episode, but...
I was about to name their bad seasons, but it would make me sound like too much of a Star Trek geek.
Yeah, you wouldn't want that, would you, Bob? Not at all. And then I'd be answering the good ones, and then I'd look like a Star Trek geek. Oh,
at least
great.
We don't wear costumes.
Yes, speak for yourself. Comic-Con's coming up. You might
find
me.
Yeah, but you've never worn a costume to Comic-Con, have you? Or
well,
have
I've
you?
Never gone, so we'll have to see, I guess. I might have to this time. I don't know. I'm not going to dress...
will they let you in there without a costume?
We're going to find out, because I'm going without a costume.
Nick says yes, they will.
Okay. But okay, so in Star Trek The Next Generation, the Survivors episode, there's a godlike being, Q-like if you're a Star Trek geek, who the difference between him and Q is that he's highly moral, very ethical. He's a total pacifist, refuses to kill throughout the episode, makes the statement that he absolutely will not harm another being. And it's a believable thing because you see him kind of struggle with the things that he's presented with by the crew. They don't yet realize he's this type of being. And so they're challenging him on things. And you see the actor does a very good job of showing the moral turmoil in his soul throughout this episode. So you really have a lot of compassion for this character. But what we learn at the end of the episode is that this planet has been destroyed. We knew that at the beginning. But why it was destroyed, an alien race came and attacked the planet. Everybody on the planet wanted to defend it. He is such a pacifist, he refused to. But his wife, who he loved very deeply, he pretended to be a human for all these years to be married. She never even knew that he was this super being. She's killed, and in a moment of absolute remorseful, horrible rage, he destroys the aliens that killed his
and
wife.
Not just the aggressors, he wipes out the entire race.
The entire race.
Wherever they exist,
race.
Even if they're not on that, everywhere they exist in the
universe. Everywhere
so
in
he
the
goes
universe.
From being a pacifist to
a complete
being somebody who just completely annihilated, just
genocide to the max. Yeah, yes. I mean, as genocide, perfect genocide, I can't even believe I said that. That's such an awful thing to say. But that's really what it was. And so this is a heinous, terrible thing that you see. But it's also challenging for a viewer because you like the guy. But wow, he's done this terrible thing. Well, when he tells his story to Captain Picard, and Picard's response is kind of brusque for Picard. But he says, we're not qualified to be your judges. We don't have any law that's going to fit your crime. This is not something that we can judge. You've done something that morally we don't know what to do with. Now, I don't think that they were targeting moral relativism here. I think they were just putting out a scenario.
I think it was just so heinously evil they didn't know what to do with it.
Right. There you go.
He wasn't saying that we don't know if this is evil. He's saying this is so evil, it's beyond our laws.
Well, let's see. Do I have the quote? I have the quote from the end of the episode. Picard calls him a being of extraordinary power and conscience. Direct quote.
Yeah.
So Picard wasn't calling him evil.
But he wasn't acting on his conscience at that particular
that's a good
moment.
Point. Okay.
Unfortunately, when a supreme beam like that has a moment.
He really does, right?
He really does.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to have a moment of break, but we will be back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Boubian. Moral relativism in movies.
Now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today is a pop culture edition. I realize that an awful lot is going on in the news all over the world, from Malaysia to Israel to our own borders. When a radio show is only on once a week, and when it's also a variety show which tries to hit different kinds of subjects, then of course we're limited and we can't get to everything every week. But I will be talking about the news next week. Also next week, I'm going to be critiquing two movements within Christianity. These movements are at odds with each other. I myself do not associate with either movement. As with many theologies, they're both partly right and partly wrong. The Bible you would find in the middle someplace. This is replacement theology, which teaches erroneously that God is done with Israel. And in the opposite corner, the Hebrew Roots movement, which is kind of an extreme reaction to the extreme. That's next week on The Bob Siegel Show. But this week, say hello again to film critic Mark Boubian.
Thanks, Bob. Well, let's take back to the Next Generation movie, the episode. One of the things that I viewed this as, in terms of sort of a relativistic, not condemnation, not even judgment. What do you call it when you don't judge somebody for their morality, the lack of judgment, because we can't judge you. Let's compare this fellow to Hitler. Okay, now, they wouldn't make this comparison in the episode. Hitler,
no,
I don't
because
think
Hitler,
had...
Hitler at least didn't have a conscience anymore.
Right.
He
okay.
He did it one time, but
right.
He did not have one anymore by the time he was doing
okay.
His atrocities.
But let's take a... If there were ever were such a thing, somebody that was able to commit genocide...
He accomplished
genocide,
still what Hitler was setting out to accomplish
yes,
with
did.
The Jews. He accomplished a genocide.
And... So let if somebody in the world here accomplished genocide or even attempted it and killed lots of people and showed remorse at the end, demonstrated conscience. What if Hitler came out and demonstrated conscience? Say he was captured and he demonstrated that he really felt bad. Now, I really don't think there's any question as to what we would ultimately do. We would convict him of his crime. And most likely put him to death. That's what would have happened at Nuremberg. So Picard's statement in this situation isn't actually accurate. And I think that's kind of the... It sounds good. We don't have any sort of...
Well, there's a little bit of a difference. And here's where it gets muddied because it is science fiction. This guy, because of the power he had, in one bad moment of hatred, he was able to wipe out an entire race.
Right. And, that
and I got the impression, it's been a while since I watched that episode. See, I'm not that much of a Star Trek geek, because it's been a while since I've seen it.
2 weeks.
But more like a few years. But anyway, I got the impression from what I recall that moments later he regretted what he did, but it was a done deal. So it could be, I'd relate that more to somebody flying off in anger and throwing something and then stopping what they're doing. Unfortunately, because of the power that this guy had, he was able to commit genocide.
Right.
Now, for a human being to commit genocide, they'd have to thoughtfully, strategically carry it out.
Right.
So in some ways, you can't really compare that. Genocide might in that episode might have been the result, but the power they were giving him is something that's just not realistic.
Right, absolutely. And the situation would never really happen in real
right.
life.
But if we wanted to ask, how do we judge somebody who flies off the handle and then regrets it and just says, I had a moment of passion and I lost control and I feel bad, and but I, you know, that's a little bit different. That's a different question.
Okay, then let's look at it this way. Say somebody flies off the handle and kills somebody else, just in a moment of anger, throws something, not necessarily even intending to hit someone else, and hits them and kills them, they would still stand trial.
And they would have to, because they could always do that again.
Right. Okay. So we do have a way of judging people in these situations.
Yes.
So
yes.
I still, even though it's a challenging idea that, yeah, of course this guy flew off the handle and killed all these millions, how do we judge you? Of course, that's...
Yeah, I think Picard could have judged him, at least verbally. I think he could have said, gee, we really wished you hadn't done that.
Right. Now, the interesting thing is, the whole time he's describing how he's a pacifist, well, Dr. Crusher is behind him, condemning him for his pacifism. You didn't help them. You have all this power.
Well, of course, the pacifism sometimes is, it always sounds like a good thing, but if you're standing back watching evil
occur,
kill, then maybe pacifism isn't the good thing it's cracked up to be.
There you go. Right. Good
point. See, for people to even argue about pacifism, they're still saying there's good and evil. They're just arguing about what pocket it's in. They're saying there's a right and a wrong because it's wrong to see people destroyed. And some say, well, because it's wrong to see people destroyed, I won't participate. Others say, well, since it's wrong to see people destroyed, you have to participate and defend them. You have to already have a framework of good and evil to even have that discussion.
Right.
They're just arguing about if whether it's properly proportioned or not.
Right. Now, this is a really interesting statement. Now, let's move on to another movie. Not the one I had mentioned earlier, The Dark Knight, but The Fifth Element. Because that exact kind of scenario plays out in the film. There's a very evil bad guy played by Gary Oldman. Just a coincidence that he's in The Dark Knight, too. And he is, you know, he's the evil Zurg. That's his name, I'm pretty sure. Maybe I've got him mixed up with Toy Story Emperor Zurg, but it's something like that. And he's faced with a priest. Now, the priest is the good guy. He's trying to get the fifth element together to fight the ultimate evil that's coming. And this, the Gary Oldman's character is inviting the evil. He's helping the evil accomplish his task. Now, the priest asks him, how can you be such a despicable person? How can you let this happen? There's face to face, and he makes this grand justification. It's just, you know, look at all the stuff that happens once he knocks a cup off the table, which is, isn't this such a terrible thing I've done? I've broken the glass. And then all these little robots come out and clean it up, and they're all cute and fun. And he describes it in a very poetic way, and it's very silly and fun, and just a very whimsical moment in the film, stated by the most horrible character you've ever seen, and he justifies being evil. He says, it's just a matter of perspective. You're just looking at it wrong. I want the same thing as you. I want us to advance as human beings. I'm just going about it a different way. This evil allows us to create new things. It creates opportunity. It does all these wonderful things. So it's a matter of perspective in The Fifth Element. But what happens next just pulls the rug right out from under that idea.
Okay, well, we'll find out what happens next when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480539, W&S Electric.
Hi, I'm Dana Wright, here to talk about Bob Siegel's book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... The title itself is an open-ended question. You fill in the rest. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but... Is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? How will God judge people who never heard of Jesus? Can a scientific mind really accept miracles? These are but some of the concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book has been enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians alike. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
This is Bob Siegel and Mark Boubian talking about moral relativism, good and evil, and all that stuff in films.
A little bit of cliffhangers, too. So in The Fifth Element, the thing that happens after this diatribe about how evil is just a matter of perspective, Zurg starts to choke on a piece of a cherry pit, and the priest kind of gets to have his moral moment where he basically says, everything you've just told me is wrong, and here is why. Because none of the stuff that you've done can save you. It's the friendship of another human being that's going to do it. And none of this evil that you're doing helps build or create that type of relationship, in a sense. So the idea of this different perspective, it's how you look at it. Just in this one movie, Fifth Element, it has this great, it just sounded so good. And I was kind of like, wow, that's a funky thing to see in a movie. And then it's just, it's all taken away in one instant. And the priest does actually save the man's life, which raises yet another moral question. Should he have saved the guy's life? Well, I guess we'll leave that one up for another time. But it's a very fun movie, but the challenging aspect of the relativistic view, not at all challenging The Fifth Element. They reject it pretty much outright in this moment. Once they gave it its moment, and just that was it. It had its moment and it ended. And it was never, ever an idea again. Not in that movie anyway. Not in most movies either. Okay, so one other movie, The Dark Knight. That was the one I had mentioned at the beginning of the show that
they had that district attorney who was so good and then he turned bad.
Okay, that's actually not the
Harvey
one I was talking about.
And something or other.
You know what? It's The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, you want The Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah, not The Dark Knight.
Oh,
the
moral relativists went and shot up a theater? The moral relativism went beyond the movie in that
one. Okay. That's not where I was headed with that okay. at all, to be honest. Actually, I wasn't thinking about that. I was just thinking about the movie.
And it is unfortunate that movie gets associated with that.
Yes, it is.
And you weren't even going to associate it with it, and then I brought it up.
Yeah.
Sorry about
that's
that.
Okay. I'll forgive you.
Okay, so The Dark Knight Rises.
Yes, so in this movie, this is the third in the series, and the bad guy Bane basically locks up Gotham and throws the whole city to the wolves. He basically instates anarchy. The government's fallen. Nobody's in charge. The bad guys have their days, months, I guess it is. And it's a sort of an experiment in society on Bane's part. Let's see what society can do with this. And there's a time when eventually the people that are in charge, like Commissioner Gordon, who's played by Gary Oldman once again, just coincidentally, he's put on trial for his crimes against the criminals. And the criminals are putting him on trial. And it's this, you know, very post-apocalyptic image of a courtroom, just total havoc and mayhem. And the person in charge is, I believe, Scarecrow, who's one of the very bad guys from the very first movie, has a brief appearance in the second and has this actually awesome moment in The Dark Knight Rises. And the bad guy basically just says, well, we're in charge, we can judge you now. And you're being judged for, you know, doing good stuff. And off you go into the ice to fall in and drown. And that's it. And now, I don't think anybody would ever say, wow, that's awesome. That's great. You know, they're in charge now, so they get to make the rules. This is this is an illustration, once again, of how ludicrous the idea taken to its full extreme can actually be when it is just who's ever in charge gets to decide. Culture decides or someone decides. Doesn't matter. It's all relative. It's just your opinion, what you think, what you feel at the moment. That's all that really matters. And it's great to see a movie like this just kind of play with the idea briefly and then we're off. And the movie actually had a lot of really awesome things to say. And unfortunately, yes, the incident that occurred in the theater in real life really undermined a lot of what the profound messages that this movie really brought to the table politically and socially. So it is really a big, I mean, it's a disaster.
Yeah, instead of talking about all those deep things, all we did was talk about gun control.
Yeah, right. And it really undermined it. And that's one of the grave ironies of that film. But here we are talking about it. Thank God that we get a chance again. So this idea that morality doesn't necessarily have some kind of measuring stick, I think that that's something we as human beings reject just intrinsically, outright. We're not going to accept this idea when we're presented with the ludicrous situation of the bad guy judging the good guy for doing good. That's so ludicrous.
And yet notice they're still using the word good while they're judging us.
Yes, right. Right. Good point. There you go. So, right. So they are recognizing there's some kind of measuring stick at that point. Right. Not that they're using it the right way.
I've had debates with people in the philosophy who try to justify moral relativism. And one of the things they always bring up, I don't remember the name of the tribe, but there's this tribe that I think they're called the Mori. But anyway, but mm-hmm. there's this tribe, and one of the virtues that they relish is treachery. You rise in that tribe by being treacherous and betraying your friends. So they're saying, see? So they obviously don't have this conscience that you're talking about. But what I find interesting is even in this tribe, they're calling it treachery.
Right.
That's the name they're using.
Right.
So they might
that's
be,
funny.
It might be a very perverted action, but again, they have to have a framework of good and evil even to do that.
Right. And it almost sounds like the same argument that our pal Zurg was making in The Fifth Element, where doing bad things, you're going to get the best guy for the job, possibly, because the most treacherous person, it's Machiavellian. That person is the best leader because they have no real, they're going to do whatever. I wouldn't say they have no morality, but they have the most flexible morality. They can go beyond their morality. They don't want to necessarily need to engage it, per se. But yes, I still think the morality exists. And even in this case, the idea that there'd be a rise up the tribe, that would be recognized, even in a sense, they're recognizing that value in that person. And that is a moral judgment in its own right. That person is valuable. Therefore, we want to recognize what they're doing as worth recognizing, I guess. So there you go. So...
okay, well, we will be right back. You're listening to film critic Mark Boobian, Good and Evil and Moral Relativism in the Movies. Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching of nationally famous speaker Pastor Jim Garlow. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church. Sunday morning services at 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock a.m. Discussing the very important topic of moral relativism, but in the context of the arts, because sometimes in the arts we admit how we really feel about things, whereas we avoid it in discussions such as politics. Welcome back, film critic Mark Boubian.
Thanks, Bob. And I like that. I like that idea that, yeah, in the arts we really reveal ourselves.
Yeah, we're more honest in the arts.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the beauties of the arts. I like that because, I mean, in Christianity, Jesus claims to be the way, the truth, and the life. The truth being one of those imperatives. We want the truth, even as human beings. That's one of the reasons Jesus says it, but we also reveal our true selves when we go see the arts a lot of times.
And in the parables, Jesus was communicating this truth, and that was an art form in ancient Israel.
Amen to that, Bob. That's awesome. As a short story writer, I give all the kudos to Jesus for that one. Yes. Okay, so let's talk about something totally off the biblical path, sort of. Not totally, because it's still a Christian movie, but it's the most violent movie ever made. Absolutely do not see this movie if you have any weak stomach at all. A Clockwork Orange. Absolutely my favorite movie. I consider it to be one of the best movies ever.
And you've gotten in
made.
Trouble in many places by calling it your favorite movie,
yes,
haven't you?
Yes, I have. Let's see. I showed
I still like you, Mark.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, I showed it at one of our church guys' nights things, and that didn't go over as well as I had expected.
Probably if you had problems with it, it would be somebody at church.
Yeah, right. It was. But actually, a lot of the people were, you know, they were willing to engage in it.
And yet it was
so
exploring
was
good and evil, which is something the church claims
right.
to explore.
Exactly. And it beyond that, it was an exploration of free will as well, and that's one of its more overreaching sort of primary themes. But
did I tell you I was dumb enough to see Clockwork Orange in high school on a double date?
Oh, yeah, you did.
You don't want to see a movie like that when you're on a
date. You don't want to see that movie with anybody, not the same sex or opposite sex, because it's that gnarly. I mean, it's a really heavy movie. I showed it on a college campus. Now, if there's a liberal group of people that are open-minded, willing to explore anything, it's college students, and people were fleeing the theater. I had like six people demand their money back. And
it shows graphic violence and
absolutely.
Graphic rape, too.
Yes, so. Graphic rape. That's whenever you lose pretty much the whole audience, is there's a very terrible, terrible rape
scene. It's a horrible scene.
Yeah. And
yet this is done by the brilliant director, Stanley Kubrick.
And I think, though, that if he had done it any differently, really the message of the movie would have been diminished. I think it's awesome that we are morally challenged by the images that we see on the screen. That is a testament to who we are as human beings, to our good side, that we are revolted by the images of rape and murder and theft even. I mean, the main character is just unquestionably rotten to the core, evil. I mean, now, he's also kind of funny and even a little likable, and that's one of the challenging elements of A Clockwork Orange. But there's no question the images of his crimes are enough to drive people from the theater. It's that heavy. So that's how bad our main character is, and yet we see him at some point turn. Okay, so The Clockwork Orange, the title's this very sort of poetic reference to a human being having his free will taken away. And that's what happens to the main character. He's sent to prison ultimately for committing a murder. And he doesn't want to be in prison because he's actually smart. Nobody wants to be in prison that is smart. And so he volunteers for a program and does everything he can to get accepted. And they basically brainwash him so that he can't commit any violent act without getting completely sick.
But his moral compass doesn't change, just his ability to do violence.
Right.
He feels intense pain every time he tries to do violence.
Right. And so the first moment they test him, they bring a woman in who's literally half naked, her shirt's off, and he wants to rape her right there in front of everybody, and it's all the ministers and everybody who have run him through the program. It's the demonstration that they've succeeded, and he's going to ruin it by raping this woman, and he can't do it because he's completely lost. But the interesting thing about the movie, even more so, is that a priest comes up and actually condemns what everybody's done. That this guy who's been this terrible, evil, horrible person, undeniable. And we even think that the priest has been duped in the movie up to this point. Not at all. He saw through the guy from the beginning. The priest is still saying what we have done is wrong, to the point that it's almost unconscionable that we've taken his free will away. And as an audience, we watch what happens to the poor fellow. He gets beaten up. He gets trashed. He gets thrown in the gutter. Then he ultimately makes it to the house of the most horrible rape scene in the film where it occurs. He ends up back there. And the people that survived that incident recognize him and basically use him to their political ends by torturing him, in a sense. Now, I think in any movie, I would say this guy, boy, he had it coming. He deserved that, and that's great. But when I'm watching the movie, I have to admit that I really started to feel for the poor fellow, oh my gosh, he's getting beat up, and look at this.
So you weren't feeling like he was getting what he deserved. You were starting to identify with him as a character
exactly.
In the movie that's getting...
Yeah, and I think that's natural for us.
Becomes kind of an anti-hero in a way.
Yeah, the most anti of anti-heroes you can get, because he doesn't want to be a hero. He wants to be totally selfish.
Kind of like Michael Corleone in The Godfather.
Yeah, Michael Corleone had a moral compass. I think
at the beginning,
person doesn't.
Yeah, and then he lost it.
Yeah, we see right, exactly. And I think in The Godfather 1, what's interesting about the movie is we see his change, and then but we also see him not wanting to engage in that change, and it almost being he can't, escape his destiny. And I don't know, there are some good questions asked there about free will too, but he chose. There's no question that he chose to go down that path. And I think one of the interesting things about Godfather, like this movie, is that we empathize with Michael Corleone. He's doing evil.
Well, whoever's starring in a movie,
character,
they're going to kind of draw you into the drama.
Exactly.
So I think you have to account for some of that way.
Well, I think that's an interesting aspect of human nature, too, that artists that are really good at what they're doing can play off of that. Here we have it in A Clockwork Orange, where it's the most abominable character you've ever seen. And I'm not kidding. I mean, this is not a fairy tale or anything. And yet, there are moments that it's almost impossible to escape being sympathetic towards him. So that is really, a testament to the artist as well as the art form, but also, again, kind of an interesting comment on us as human beings, how we respond and why.
Okay, we'll come back for one more segment. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with Mark Boubian.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. Bobsiegel.net.
Hey,
Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Booby. And Mark, welcome back.
So in A Clockwork Orange, one of the challenges of that film is that sympathy that I've been talking about, that it builds up. And I mean, it's not going to build up for everybody, of course. It's art. Everybody responds differently. But for me, that's my response. And here's the challenge, though. I could have taken the easy way out and said, well, it's okay for him. He's actually an okay guy because, you know, he can't fight back. And, oh, he's the poor fellow, you know. But I didn't come away from the movie thinking that he was justified or did anything right ever. He was bad, and he was bad.
And they didn't even get into what made him bad. He was just
bad, right. They didn't care. It was just that he was bad, and that's all that really mattered.
John Steinbeck explored that in East of Eden. He had a woman that was just born evil. He started off her chapter by saying, I believe monsters are born sometimes. Whereas usually we'll think of reasons that might account for it. But what we would call a sociopath or psychopath, somebody whose conscience just doesn't work and maybe never worked, that might have been what they were doing there in Clockwork
Orange. Well, I think the point of the movie and the point of the novel was that was a little bit broader than just how he got the way he was. It was just, he's evil. Let's forget about how he got that way. He's that way. There are evil people in the world. I mean, there's just no question about it. We're here talking about moral relativism. You can make a relativistic statement, but good luck applying that to Hitler. Good luck applying that to anybody.
And that's
anybody.
The thing. There's certain people that are so evil that it challenges the sensibility.
Right, challenges that idea. And, you know, it wasn't, don't judge me at Nuremberg. It was judgment at Nuremberg.
Right.
Because
people want to say, well, whatever society decides is right, then how do those same people wouldn't justify the pre-Civil War South.
Right. And you can't just, I mean, it'd be easy to justify the Holocaust because that was all done within the context of a specific culture. And that's just what they were doing at the time. And boy, it was okay because that's moral relativism. Well, no, nobody thinks that. And nobody's ever going to say that seriously, not in today's day and age and not in Nuremberg. So that's one of the great failures.
And even to get away with those evils in those cultures, the pre-Civil War South had to teach that the slaves were subhuman. The Nazis had to teach that the Jews were subhuman, because the moment people admit that they're humans, they know that there's a way human beings should treat each other. In the abortion argument, people say, oh, well, that's moral relative. Some people believe in abortion and some don't. Well, no, the only relevant question is whether or not this is a life. Those that try to hold on to the pro-choice point of view, it's getting harder with the things they're finding out in science and medicine, but they traditionally held on to the idea that maybe this is not a human life.
Right.
Because they know the moment they admit that it is a human life, they know what the right and the wrong is.
Right. I mean, there was a time in my life when I wanted to, you know, abortion was okay. I wanted that to be true. And that was exactly the argument I gave myself. But of course,
but you would have never said, I believe it's a life and I still believe it's okay.
Right. I wouldn't have gotten that far.
It's predicated on the belief that it's not a life.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. And that's what I told myself. And that's how I was trying to justify it to myself. But, you know, I don't feel that way anymore. Now, in A Clockwork Orange, one of the interesting things is that, you know, they don't go down the road of moral relativism. They are moral absolutists in a sense, or moral universalists, moral whatever you want to call it. But there's a morality. There's a right and wrong, and they're talking about it, and he's crossed the line, and there's no question, and there's no question in the viewer's mind, I don't think. And so moral relativism is totally denied, but I think the greater point that I've mentioned before is that this is a movie about free will, and that the important aspect of this film is that even though there is evil, even though people do terrible things, we're not going to, it's not right to force them to be good against their will, because then they don't have a will. And that's somewhat disastrous in its own right. Now, maybe for society, we could argue, well, yeah, they're not going to hurt anybody anymore and they can be out in society. But from a philosophical standpoint, you've taken away their ability to choose. They're still evil. And that's one of the points of the movie. And one of the kind of farther reaching things is going back to the Bible, back to creation, back to what we were designed to be as human beings. God made us with free will. And here's the most challenging element of it, that we can choose to be evil. Whether we're born with it or not, we still get to make a choice to rape that woman or beat those guys up, hit them with a chain, steal that you know, cut the guy's hand. You've got choices everywhere you look, whether or not you have a conscience. So we have free will, and this movie says forcing us to choose is worse than free will and choosing evil, which is an interesting thing to say. And I think that that's a very powerful message, because there's all this stuff. I mean, I'm here all the time as a Christian, how there's so much evil in the world. How can a loving God allow evil? Well, here's a movie that actually takes on the hardest of the hard questions and attempts to illustrate a potential answer through the arts. And I think it's a very powerful movie for that reason. And it ties in very well with the ideas of good and evil, of relativism versus whether there's a God and a real objective morality. Now, in terms of talking about something like genocide, one of the new movies, Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise movie, the book explored, it's only a little aside in the book, which tells us how these aliens came to attack the Earth. It really doesn't have anything to do with the story per se. It's just sort of the catalyst. But the aliens are this race that's so far beyond humanity that they want to terraform Earth to their environment. And they reckon there's something down there. They don't know what it is really, and they don't care. They just want the planet. So off goes these destructive, terraforming creatures that basically end up fighting a war with humanity because humans don't want to leave. Now, what I find interesting about this movie is that, or this idea, not the movie per se in this aspect, but that here's the idea that these people are just sort of, oh, you know, they're not the same as us. Yeah, they're there, but we're better than them. So therefore, we can just wipe them out. We're better than them. Therefore, we can wipe it out. That's the justification that this book gives. And it sounds like a good justification. Oh, well, these aliens are so much more advanced than humanity that, yeah, they just see us as little ants. And of course, they can wipe us out. Well, that's what we were just talking about. You take a person that you want to make a slave and you say they're something else. So it's okay to do whatever we want. And so these are dangerous areas to go into. Even though that wasn't really the point of the book, it still was sort of an interesting aside. And I found that a challenging notion. And this comes from Japan, actually, which is also very interesting. Tom Cruise, not his first Japanese movie, actually. But
not if you count The Last Samurai.
Exactly. But this is probably more Japanese than that movie because it was written by a Japanese person. So it comes from Japan. So I just really like these explorations that the arts are going into now. These don't really have necessarily to do with moral relativism per se. Like I said at the beginning, it's really hard to find anybody talking about it.
Yeah, there's subjects that relate to it. It wouldn't necessarily have been the director saying, that's what I'm going to talk about.
Right, exactly.
But to do anything about human nature, that it gets into that subject.
Right, and anybody that's really going to be honest and challenging, I think that, yeah, we're going to find situations where it looks like we can make some kind of relative judgment, but ultimately it tends to just fall apart.
Or at least explore the question, what makes us good and evil? Where does...
Right.
Because a lot of times atheists will tell me that they are moral relativists, but then they'll start saying things like, well, I hate the hypocrisy of religion. And I'll say, really? Are you morally outraged by the hypocrisy of religion? They'll say, yeah. And they go, well, I thought you were a moral relativist.
So right.
Then they start realizing they're not really.
Yeah, yeah.
And
right.
Then if they started connecting the dots and saying, well, what is it then that gives us a moral compass? They might not have related that to God, but that's the only explanation,
right?
Unless we want to become moral relativists, which nobody really truly is.
Right. And that
the guy that came closest was Friedrich Nietzsche. He turned it into a philosophy called nihilism. He said, we've made up these morals anyway. Let's admit it. And to him, admitting that you made them up and being able to achieve that was what he called the Superman. Different
kind of ironic, yeah.
Different definition of the word Superman.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, we're out of time.
Thanks,
we'll
Bob.
Have you back when you see some of those bad summer movies.
Okay,
Bob,
thanks.
Back and tell us how bad they are. We'll see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.